I had a treat earlier this week, and I found a great book that Jane Powers had gifted me, and it's called Church Chuckles. This one came from a family newsletter of Our Lady of Perpetual Health in Illinois. Under the family news section, Wednesday at 5 p.m., there will be a meeting of the Little Mothers Club. All wishing to become little mothers, please see the minister in his study. Sorry. Don't meet me in my study, okay? Jane was too good with that type of humor. Parables. So we got some parables today. Our patron saint, one of them, Robert Capon, always claims that you read these parables, and your first move is to diagram the characters within them. In other words, to understand where the sort of the symbols and the metaphors lay. Where is the truth? Figure out who's at work here in these stories. And today we hear really about sort of two sets of people. There's sort of three mini stories, but in those, each of those stories, you see two sets of people. So the first set is, you know, the safe, the protected, the images of the 99 sheep all happy in their little area, or the 9 coins all appropriately organized in a purse, or the Pharisees and the scribes that are witnessing this. It's the folks, in other words, that have it all together. Maybe they've got a fat 401k, or they shorted the market at the right time, or they have the proper insurance, beautiful children or grandchildren. They're the envy of all. This group tends to meld together, right, in a sort of a collective self-justification that they just have it all together. Things are buttoned up, and they're going to keep the status quo, because in response to, are you okay, to these 99, they always say, yeah, I'm fine. Do you say, do you need any help? And the one characteristic of a Pharisee or a scribe or the 99 or the 9 coins is, no, we're fine. It's the same group in our modern era that curates all their images on social media. Sometimes it's a group that exists in church that is all focused on the sort of institutions or the sort of action of the church. In other words, it's a group that's become disconnected from their lived experiences. Their emotional register, in other words, is disconnected from where they are. And so they hide in this big group, and they just say, everything is hunky-dory. Their lives, in other words, drip in dissonance. Here's a great example of this, and what I call the industrial arms race of youth sports. The industrial arms race of youth sports. And it's a prime example of everyone wanting to be in the 99, and everybody being in the 99, and in the ratcheted up tension within this set of everything is good and we're great. Now, this isn't just new for those that have kids or grandkids in this age. It's not just new to this world today. If you looked at the 1992 film, which we watched last night, about Finding Bobby Fischer, I don't know if anybody's seen the film. It's an incredible movie. But the basic gist is, let's try to find the next Bobby Fischer. If anybody remember, Bobby Fischer was the absolute protege of the American chess world. It was the first American to beat the Russian, and it was crazy. There's that one great scene of him playing like 20 people at once. If anybody's seen it, like he walks down, he makes a move, goes to the next table, et cetera, et cetera. Well, then he also famously burned out in 1972 after he beat the Russian. He disappeared. He became a recluse. No one could find him. And so there was this movement within the chess world for years after that, to try to find the next Bobby Fischer, find the next protege. So this film is about that. And it follows this young man named Josh, who is brilliant at chess. He could see the board. He sees the patterns in a way that most people or hardly anybody could ever see. And so it follows him getting recognized and then getting connected with the coaches. And he keeps going up the ladder in the collective cool world or the collective world of chess. In other words, within the 99, and they're pushing him up higher and higher and higher and higher until, of course, he breaks. And he has a major rupture with his father, including this line where he says, "You just don't love me anymore because I can't win at chess." And the film, in other words, captures what I think Bob Dylan wrote so brilliantly in his song, "It's Not Dark Yet," when he writes, "Behind every beautiful thing is some kind of pain. Behind every beautiful thing is some kind of pain." In other words, Josh begins to lose on purpose. He begins to become disinterested from chess because he hurts. He feels like his father's love is conditional on his ability to play chess. It's not until they're separated from one another. He is isolated. He becomes the one, in other words. And the father is isolated. They're both lost, that they're able to reconnect again. And I'll let you watch the rest of the film. But it's great. The point about the 99 is that it may look pretty to be in that group. It might feel right to be a Pharisee or a scribe, to have a fancy electric car. But just remember, behind every beautiful thing, some kind of pain. No one has it all together. In other words, we are all the other set of characters in these stories, who Capon calls the lost, the least, and the lame. The least are the known sinners and tax collectors. Then we have the lost, the drunkards, the mixed, the misfits, those that don't seem to fit in. Remember, at this time, if you had some type of malady, in general, everybody thought it was because you were a sinner. You'd done something to deserve it, in other words. You were cast out of the 99. In other words, you became the people, and haven't we all said this, that the Pharisees and scribes would just say, "I'm glad I'm not like that guy." Maybe you've never said that before. I have, right? And whether we've ever not said that out loud, we've all thought that. Well, at least what's going on isn't as bad as, you know, poor Shem down the street. So this is this other huge category, which is the lost and the least and the lame. It is so hard. It is so very hard, in other words, to accept that label, to accept that you are lost, that you're lost in how to deal with an illness, that you're lost in how to deal with a wayward sibling or an estrangement, that you're lost how to navigate parenthood, or you're lost in your relationship with your spouse, or maybe you just feel left out, that you feel like you've become lame, that the world's moved on past you and you don't know how to connect back with the things that once brought you joy or once made you feel like you were connected or involved or part of the 99. Maybe you just don't know where to go. Maybe the crushing effects of this cruel world has unmoored you to such a degree that you feel like everything is thick fog around you and rocky shoals beneath you. We can't help but think about today, 21 years ago, roughly 120 minutes ago, when those planes flew in to those towers, and we lost people that we knew or that we were connected with by extension, that loved ones didn't get to say goodbye to their children or their grandparents. And that the world was changed forever power in these parables is the truth that bubbles up in the descriptions of humanity. And this is the bridge between the 99 and the one, between the Pharisees and the scribes and the sinners and the tax collectors, between the 9 coins and the one. Because it's a rhetorical trick that Jesus is doing. And he sets it up with this first line about the Pharisees and scribes. He is instantly diagramming these two sets for us to understand that anyone with a high anthropology, with a high degree of self-sufficiency, cannot actually really exist in this world. You cannot, in other words, do it on your own. Even if you think you're part of the 99, even if you think you're a Pharisee and a scribe, even if you think you're all perfectly organized in the bank with the 9 coins. See, the one trait of that 3 little buckets of the one group is that they all trust themselves first. Put their trust in their own abilities and actions. How'd that work out for them, you wonder? How does it work out for you? Because since the beginning of time, there hasn't been a sheep that hasn't wandered off at some point. There hasn't been a coin that's not been misplaced or fallen through a hole in your pocket or stuck behind something else in your billfold. In other words, there isn't some human out there without some kind of pain. I don't think. If you are that person, meet me later. 90 miles. But we know, right? It's heavy. But we know the truth. We know that we all have those points of pain and suffering and isolation. Places where the world has just dumped dirt on us. Places where we've been estranged from our friends or family. Places where we just feel, frankly, lost. Behind every beautiful thing is some kind of pain. So this parable today is telling us very clearly that we are the one lost sheep. We're the one lost coin. Where were the outcasts and the sinners that are dining at that banquet table? And this is precisely the good news of the gospel, that we are those ones, that we are that person in pain and suffering. It wouldn't be an appropriate Anglican sermon if I didn't try to bring in Queen Elizabeth. And Queen Elizabeth serves as a brilliant metaphor for what we're talking about this morning, because on the surface, she was very much the head of the 99, right? Is much of an inside person as the inside person could be. The supreme commander, even of our church, right? The Queen Elizabeth's the head of the Anglican church. And she should have it all together. And tabloids aside, we know that's not true. From her own words, she cast and put her trust not in herself, but in Jesus. In 2014, in her Christmas message, she writes, "For me, the life of Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, whose birth we celebrate today, is an inspiration and an anchor in my life. A role model of reconciliation and forgiveness. Jesus stretched out his hands in love and acceptance and healing." See, those are the hands that found the nails of humanity on the cross, that spilled the blood from those hands that became hands of love, that find the lost sheep or the misplaced coin that served the unlovable. Those are the hands of God that reaches into our world for you and for me. These are the hands that come after the never lost, those that think they have it all and can't even say they're the one. Those hands still come until that day when they don't. and they fall only to be caught by the hands of our Savior. The hands tell us of the good news that God is willing to risk it all, even his only son, to save the one defined as you and me. By virtue of saving the one, saving us all. Jesus says in the Gospel of Matthew, "For the Son of Man has come to save the lost."